Well, when I gave the layout of our broadcast partners coming to these microphones, I mentioned Ken Timmerman, so we go to Ken. Ken is a very busy man. He and his partner, the two men who are running for governor and lieutenant governor of Maryland, they're going to be in their primary on Tuesday. I want you to pray for them. I bet it's a busy time for you right now, Ken.
Which it sure is, Jimmy. Charles Lawler and I are all over the state of Maryland, and people are telling us every day that they have early voted for us already and that they're going to come out and support us. And they tell us especially that they're praying for us, and that makes such a huge difference. We can really feel that everywhere we go.
Well, that's such an important bit of information from your constituency out there telling you that they're praying for us. Well, thank you for being available. I know it's a really, really tight time for you. Talk to me about what's going on in Iraq. I want to spend my entire time with you today focusing on Iraq and what's happening there. What's the latest update?
Well, the ISIS fighters are still encircling this refinery in Beji, which is north of Baghdad. It's quite ironic that the Obama administration blames a spike in oil prices and gasoline prices in the United States because an Iraqi refinery goes offline. It's a bit pathetic, if you ask me. But nevertheless, it's very important for Iraq. It is their major refinery, and that's going to strike a blow against all ordinary Iraqis. ISIS is also encircling Baghdad. They have taken over the Sunni Triangle, virtually all of it. Remember those cities that we were reading about every day in 2004, 2005, Fallujah, Ramadi, these places where U.S. Marines, so many of brave men died, defending their brothers on the battlefield and trying to defend some semblance of U.S. policy to bring freedom to that people. That's all coming back now. Now ISIS has occupied them. They're in control. And it looks, Jimmy, like they're going to have their caliphate from the outskirts of Baghdad into northern Syria in a single contiguous stretch of land. That's bad news for everybody.
Well, last we talked, you told me, Ken, that you didn't think that they could take Baghdad. If they did, they'd have to not come in from the north but go to the south and come back up. Is that your same view right now?
Yes, I think they're going to have a hard time taking Baghdad because there are huge numbers of Shias living in Baghdad, especially in the northeastern part, what is called Sadr City. There's about a million Shias living there. But my guess is they're going to consolidate their hold on the territories they've got and actually set up administrative units, and they're going to try to basically imbricate themselves into the local population. So if these F-18 Hornets that have been flying overhead doing recon flights start to bomb, there will be significant civilian casualties, which they'll blame on the United States.
The leading cleric in the Shiite group of peoples who live in Iraq, Ayatollah Ali Sustaini, is calling for a new government to be formed. And he's wanting to include the Sunnis, the Kurds, and the Shiites, but he didn't say anything about Maliki. Is he trying to hint to Maliki to resign, get out of the way?
Yeah, wink, wink. it's very interesting to hear that Ayatollah Sistani has been saying this. They have had a coalition government up until the recent elections. Even Maliki was forced to govern more or less with a coalition. I think what you're going to see, Jimmy, is the reemergence of Ahmad Chalabi. Chalabi, who also has close ties to Iran, but he was working very closely with the United States and the Western coalition. And frankly, I've known Chalabi since 1989. I've lost touch with him since the war in 2003, since the U.S. targeted him in 2004, tried to kill him. But Chalabi is somebody who is a coalition builder. Maliki is not. And Chalabi is someone who has very deep ties to the Kurds. He actually helped the Kurds stop their own civil war in 1995 when they were up in the northern part of the country still with facing Saddam's troops to the south. And Chalabi personally stood in between the warring Kurdish factions and helped them to create a ceasefire and later a coalition government. So he's somebody who's got a great deal of political savvy. He is a coalition builder. He's not somebody who tears things down. And he's not a sectarian the way that Maliki is perceived as a sectarian. Chalabi has worked with Sunnis forever.
Do you think he could actually bring this country, before it goes into civil war, bring them back into a coalition that would form a state of Iraq?
I think that he has a chance. The one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about, worried about, and it's ironic, really, is that this go-round, Chalabi is going to be supported by the Iranian regime. So the Iranians are going to support him to build a new coalition, and they will demand a price for that. The earlier go-round, in 2003, the Iranians were nowhere near him. It was the United States. And once President Bush appointed Paul Bremer as the envoy to Iraq, and he essentially declared himself the viceroy of an occupation army, an occupation force, which was never our strategy at the time, he fired Chalabi and the entire Iraqi governing council, and that led to the insurrection and the tremendous loss of American lives as well as Iraqi lives that followed in 2003, 2004, 2005. So we had a great opportunity to see the same thing we're going to see next month back in 2003, but we threw it away through our own stupidity. Now, if Chalabi comes back, he will have to pay a price to the Iranians. That's the one thing that I really fear.
Yeah, that would probably be the case. Well, speaking of the United States, President Obama this week said no boots on the ground in Iraq, but we'll send in 300 special op guys to see what they can do. But he's sending them into Baghdad on the Shiite side. Is this a smart move or not?
Pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. He's claiming to send them in to train the Iraqi army to do intelligence and target assessment, things like that. But for crying out loud, that's what we were doing with them for 10 years. And then we pulled out unceremoniously in 2012. And so now we're going to go back in and do the same thing that we've been doing before and think it's going to work this time with 300 troops instead of 30,000. It's insane.
Well, what about those targeted airstrikes? Is that a good idea? I'm listening to some of the military former leaders there in Iraq saying that's ridiculous. You're going to have a lot of collateral problems out there killing other peoples.
Well, that's right. And as I said in the opening of this segment together, I think that is the plan of ISIS. They are going to try to imbricate themselves to build themselves into the communities in Fallujah and Ramadi and other big Sunni towns. So if we do launch airstrikes, there will be significant civilian casualties, and they'll blame it on the United States and use that as a justification to launch terrorist attacks against us directly here at home. So, I think that in the end it is going to be counterproductive. We're getting the worst of a bad world because of our policy mistakes, one after the other after the other.
Yes, that is correct as well. Talk to me about ISIS doing a worldwide campaign on the social media. Seems like all terrorist organizations know very well how to use the social media.
Well, you know, there's an old adage in the Muslim world, and that is people want to ride the strong horse. And if they see that your horse is weak, they're not going to go with you. But if they see that your horse is strong, they want to go with you. So ISIS is trying to put out this impression of strength. They are the strong horse now. The United States is weak, and they're doing it every way they can. They're doing it with arms, and they're doing it through social media. They are a increasingly sophisticated organization that we in the United States, and I mean the intelligence community, and especially our political leaders, have underestimated.
Ken, I'm hearing more and more from the Israeli leadership that they're watching very closely now what's going on in Iraq. And I think that would have to be because of that phrase that we know them by, the acronym ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Remind everybody the Levant and Israel is a part of that Levant, are they not?
That's right. The Levant meaning Lebanon, Syria, and Israel, and absolutely right. Israel is a part of that. Is it ISIL, ISIS? Because ISIS is really Al-Sham, which means the same thing. It means Levant in Arabic. So these are essentially the same groups, and they are not just active in Iraq, they're not just active in Syria, but they are also in Lebanon. And I am sure that you have a lot of people in Hamas and a lot of people in the Palestinian territories who are going to become sympathetic to them because they give the appearance of being the strong horse.
you know what? It's going to take a strong leader riding that strong horse to bring this together. Whether it be now or after the rapture of the church, when the Antichrist goes into biblical Babylon, modern-day Iraq, to take charge of the world at that time, he's a strong hand on people who need to be brought back together. Ken, thank you so very much for taking a moment out of your busy, busy schedule to give us some interaction and insight into what's going on, and we'll be praying for you on Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. God bless.